Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton. Tonight's episode, David and I are going to explore mythical creatures and beings. And David, I'm chomping at the bit to get your initial impressions of on this topic. So take it away.
They exist.
Okay, cool.
All right, we're done.
Shortest episode we ever had.
No. my take on them is, I will say it's kind of a, if you ask, do these creatures exist? And I'm going to clump them under like mermaids and the fae or fairies, fairy with an E. Or let's see, what else have we got? We've got mermaids, we've got fairies with an E, we've got elves, we've got dryads, nymphs, and then we even have the darker ones, which are the vampires and stuff. But I don't really categorize those so much. We've got the centaurs, you've got the dragons, you've got, you can even talk about Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster. I guess they belong in that kind of legendary creatures, right?
Yeah, what about minotaurs and dragons?
Minotaurs and dragons, definitely. You can definitely put those in there.
D&D all the way, baby.
D&D, that's right. Yeah, they kind of borrowed a lot of those things. But I do believe that there are realms in which they do exist. Mm-hmm. And the play between their realm and our realm is really, when there is play, and I think there often is, it's pretty subtle. And there's hardly any evidence for us to see it, because we attribute things like biology and the laws of nature and the laws of physics to a lot of the effects that we might see from this other realm. But I do believe that there are people who can kind of poke their head into the realm and kind of see things. There's a, you and I know someone mutually, Donald, that says that she has a lot of experience with the fae.
Oh, yeah.
So she's really a firm believer in the fae and fairy realm, that is.
And two people's names just popped into my head, and I think you're talking about one, but I'm not sure. Anyway, that's one of those topics that it's kind of like I've always been kind of curious about, but never really enough to really investigate it as much as, you know, someone who says they have curiosity in it would actually look for it.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know why. I think
Do you think they exist? Do you believe they exist?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, can you describe, can you give a definition exactly what the fae are?
As far as I know, I don't have a really, I'm not a very, very well learned in this area, but the fae is fairies with an E. When I say with an E, F-A-E-R-Y is the traditional spelling for the fae. F-A-E is the spelling for that. I've seen variations of the spelling, but that's not important. The F-A-I is more, F-A-I-R-Y is more of the tails and, you know, that kind of thing. But the F-A-E-R-Y, fairy realm would be the, I consider them grouped in with the earth elementals, because elementals is a whole other subgenre of this very topic.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they're linked in with the earth elementals, and I think that my belief is that they're very nature connected. They're very connected to trees. They're very connected to woods. They're very connected to plants. Their energy kind of intersperses with trees and plants and such. If plants and trees could communicate with us easily, you know, in our terms, they would say, well, yeah, they're right there. It's obvious. They do this for me. I think they really do have an effect on nature. And they can be as small as, you know, little tiny things. I mean, they could be smaller than what are those things called? Shrews?
Mm-hmm.
Or they can be as big as us, from my understanding. And then they have different kind of hierarchy and realm and such like that.
Yeah, I know that there is a vein of paganism that actually studies the fae, and you can be a fairy pagan, and it goes into working with that energy, working with those beings, working with that type of, you know, environment through a more of a pagan type format. Mm-hmm. And I've met and hung out with a few fairy pagans, and they're, you know, it's if you meet them, they seem just like everybody else. But once you start, you know, talking about religion with them, and especially at the time I was a practicing pagan when I was talking with them, it seems like there's just this whole thing that goes, a lot of doors just like close, and it's just like, yeah, you're not, no, we're not going to, no, you'll have to find out on your own, but we're not going to just give you all the answers.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because my understanding of the Fae is that they, if you ask, I mean, there's a lot of things, like if you ask your spirit guides to reveal themselves to you and you just learn how to look, you'll be able to hear your communication from them. Same with angels and those kind of things. But with the Fae, it's very different. My understanding is that you can ask all you want, but if they don't think you're really worthy, and that's not a high and mighty thing,
yeah,
if they don't think that your heart is true enough or pure enough or your intentions are good enough, that they'll be like, no, sorry, you know, we're not going to take that risk. I mean, look how much we've ravaged our environment and nature as it is.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't they be mistrustful and suspicious, you know?
And to be honest with you, I've never had anything more than just a general curiosity about it. So, you know, it's kind of like, you are not worthy.
Yeah.
We're not going to bare our souls and our histories and, you know, all our secrets and everything to someone who just casually wants to be has weekend interest in it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I can see that.
How is it you believe in these creatures like the Fae and dragons and mermaids and those things? I mean, what substantiates it for you?
Oh, it has to go with the whole elemental stuff. When I was a practicing pagan, I called them entities and beings and stuff. But since becoming a healer and really seeing, you know, the world through different types of energy, I see them as a different type of energy. Basically, when I go out and I feel the breeze, I see the trees. If I'm in a place, which I have been many times in the past, I can actually feel like I'm communicating on some level with nature at that point.
Okay.
And to me, that is for me, like, oh, this must be the Fae that people talk about.
Well, what about these things like centaurs, for example, or dragons? Those, if you're really a studier of elementals and mystical creatures, you might be able to categorize them, but without being able to do so, then what gives your... I'm more curious. I'm not questioning.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a devil's advocate here. I don't have any room to be. You know, there's some things I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that. But what gives you validity in those kind of things, like the creatures themselves?
Oh, see, when we're talking about dragons and centaurs and stuff like that, I don't really know much. I don't really know how I feel about that at the moment. Or actually, for years, there was a time when I was practicing pagan that I was working with dragon magic for I think about 6 months or so, and I got into it. I worked with it for a little while, enough to realize, yeah, I just don't vibe well with this type of energy. And to say that dragons have never existed in the physical form, I can't say that, because I'm like, I don't know, who knows? You know, maybe they did long, long ago, and I just don't know. To say that they don't exist today, I would have to say that's probably more accurate, where they're probably, if they physically exist today, they're probably hiding out somewhere really, really, you know, in the outskirts of some part of the world that we just can't find.
Well, I don't think they physically exist today based on consensus reality, which is kind of a new term I've been playing with lately. But I do believe that they exist within their own realm, and I do believe they exist within their realm enough to be able to tangibly contact them. I think for a dragon, it would be a lot more difficult to contact them than it would be the fairy realm. I think the more defined and the more kind of... let's see how I can put this. The more tangible they are as far... Let me try to explain it this
way. Okay.
The Fae. Fairies, as we know, as the small, winged, sprite-like creatures. they're so kind of fleeting, and they're really so integrally tied to the element of nature that I don't think it's as great of a shift to be able to perceive them.
Mm-hmm.
The dragon is not as greatly tied to an element. They kind of are residing in their own realm, like a djinn or an efreet would, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And that to the degree that it would take a huge leap to able to physically perceive them. I don't think it's impossible. I just think the realm is just so, it's just far removed. I think they're kind of, it's almost like when people talk about the Fey royalty, which are really like very old creatures that have lived for centuries. They're very difficult to perceive if you ever can. And I think it's that kind of same level. I mean, where am I getting this from? I don't know. It's the thing I just said about the dragons, it's just kind of, I don't know. There's a lot of things that I believe. I don't have a basis for it. Part of it could be me making it up, but I don't think so. I think it's just, you can't substantiate it. So I'm going to say, go ahead, Randy, bring it on. You know, prove me wrong. Yeah. I can't prove him right. He can't prove me wrong. We're at a stalemate. Bobby Fischer says, take your board and go home.
Yeah, the thing is, I agree. When I was working that 6 months with Dragon Energy, I feel beyond any shadow of any doubt that I have that dragons do exist on definitely a certain level, and you know they don't take lightly to casual interactions.
Now, when you say you worked with Dragon Energy, describe what that was about, what that entailed.
It's basically kind of like working with Fey Energy, like we talked about, working with the environment. That's working on one level, and working with Dragon Energy is working on a much different level. To me, it's more closer related to working with like Ascended Masters or Pleiadian energy than actual guides or anything like that.
I like to think of the dragons as between working with a guide and working with an animal.
Oh, okay.
Like a spirit guide and an animal guide. I think they're kind of fall somewhere in between. Remember we talked about animal guides last week.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if we talked about it in this episode, how you can call on specific energies, animal energies. Did we talk about that?
I don't remember if we did or not.
I'm not sure we did. I don't think we did. But the idea is that, for example, if you want help with a certain aspect of your life, what you do is you call on the energy of that particular animal to come help you so that you can garner the strength to be able to do something. Like, for example, if you're studying and you're really having trouble really getting the knowledge in your head, you might call on mouse then, because so that you can really find the attention to detail. Or if you're working on a fine project like circuitry or something. So there's the idea of calling on dragon. And this is a little funny thing that I did with, I have to tell this story.
Okay.
This was just a couple of weeks ago at most. My wife has been, she's had some kind of really crazy, hairy, hectic days at work.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a particular individual that she works with that when this person is in her work environment, that person commands a lot of attention. They really are in your space and they want to talk constantly. And it's very difficult to get things done because this person carries enough weight to where you can't necessarily just shove them away.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they really can, and they also can cause a little bit of drama. So I told Jackie, and she's like, I don't know if I'm ready to deal with this person today. And I told her, I said, what you need to do is just create a dragon for yourself. And what I want you to do is visualize the dragon exactly in as much detail as you can and have that surround you and guard you. And she did. And she described her dragon to a T. She said she blinged it out and all this other stuff. And,
oh, wow.
And that day at work, the person in question, it was almost as if she was avoiding her the whole day. She had no interactions with her that day.
Huh.
So it's, and I do believe that you can do this. And I think that that's kind of working with that's kind of my experience working with dragon energy.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I was. Those types of experiences when I was working with the dragon energy is almost verbatim. I mean, it's like, hey, you took my story. So, but
I ask you a question and then I answer it, right?
Yeah, exactly. But no worries. But yeah, I think I started mainly focusing when I was working with dragons before working with them for communication to connecting to higher realms of and the Akashic records and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then shortly thereafter, I got into actually working with my guides. I'm like, oh, well, hey, my guides, it's much easier to work with them. And that's where all the healing stuff started. And so it's kind of like, okay, kind of forgot about dragons.
Is there any particular elemental realm that you feel a little bit more connected to than any other?
Oh, definitely.
What's that?
Definitely. Air and water.
Yeah, I figured you were going to say air.
Specifically storms.
Okay.
So I actually have created storms occasionally, or at least it seemed like I created storms. Without any foreknowledge of anything, where basically North Alabama in the summertime is extremely hot and humid. Mm-hmm. And when I was living there, there would be times when I'd be like, okay, I would like to have it rain for at least a day by Wednesday, or like on Wednesday or Wednesday night at the latest. And within a 24-hour period, it normally would start raining, and it would last for any length of time, and then it'd be gone, and that would be like the only rain we had for 2 weeks.
But my understanding of things like huge weather environmental patterns is that when they are conjured, that's the word I'm going to use.
Wizards.
When a story, or if it's called, we'll even say that, the nicer, kinder, gentler term, so we don't feel so conjurer. So that when a storm is called by a person, that actually it is a collaborative effort, that there are a lot of other people that are calling that storm as well, and that your effort was contributing to the efforts of the other people calling it. You might have been the scale tipper. If you didn't, you would have been one person short of being able to conjure the storm, where you did, and
I looked at it more as for everybody that was wanting rain, they were putting out the energy, and I was just kind of like the lens that was focusing it.
Okay.
Because I was aware of how to focus it, whereas most people were just like, man, this heat is unbearable, I wish it would rain. And like, that's a little battery right there, I can use that.
Well, do you think that if there were, would you have been able to focus it if you were the only one who wanted it?
I don't know. I have no idea. To actually see if that's possible, I would have to find out everybody that lived in my locality, how they felt about the heat and whether they wanted rain. And, depending on where you are, that's a few hundred thousand people.
Well, here's the interesting thing. The reason I ask that question is because I see each element having their own personality. And wind is an interesting one, because wind kind of ranges from wise to childlike,
Mm-hmm.
And storms, we might say that they're wise, but they're almost childlike in a way as well. And I think that wind, when you call in elements, you got to be careful because, I'm not saying you personally, Donald. I'm just saying that one has to be careful in calling on elements, because elements have their own mind.
Oh, yeah.
And you can ask an element to do as you will, but A, that doesn't mean they will. Or two, you may call them, and then once they get here, they're going to do whatever they want. It's like the idea of fire elements don't like to be ignored, for example. You should never leave a fire unattended. Number one, because it's just not a good idea. But number two, it's because you light a fire, and if you walk away, the fire's like, how come you're not watching me? You ever notice how hypnotized you get by a flame?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing that you learn really, 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 really early whenever you're working with higher energies or higher entities or higher beings. It's like Yeah, you don't command them per se. You basically request their attention.
Right,
Yeah,
exactly.
and it's like, hey, so yeah, it's kind of warm, and we thank you, fire in, realm for providing heat and sustenance and all this stuff. And but we would like to now, confer with the water and storm realm and get some rain in this here place.
Right. Up in
And
here.
yeah. I was going to say something, but it involved a profanity, and I didn't feel like profaning myself at the moment. So yeah, but yeah, definitely water and air, and I found that it's for me, and I think this is for a lot of people when they actually are connecting with nature. You go out, you're connecting with nature, you're in that mindset, you're in that place, and then you're thinking, you're lost in your thoughts, you're thinking about either your life or things that you want or things that have happened or just whatever. And then all of a sudden you'll notice you'll have a thought, and shortly thereafter, like moments thereafter, a breeze will pick up, and it'll just be like, oh, there is a breeze out here today. I haven't felt it all day. And now all of a sudden, boom. Some people say, oh, the wind was talking to you, saying, yes, that's a good thought right there. And other people, which is a lot of people that are, well, to use the Harry Potter term, the muggles, would be like, would not even notice, like,
What's a muggle?
oh,
I know nothing about the Harry Potter.
oh, okay. So for everybody that does know, they're like, you're kidding me, David, right? Muggles are non-magical people.
Okay.
They are the typical stereotypical we see like football on Sunday or Monday, I think it is now, and then go to school, go to work, come home. That's all the reality that there is.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, and so when I say a muggle would be like, okay, so the wind's blowing, big whoop. Whereas people that are more in tune with that kind of energy would be more like, oh, I had a thought, the wind picked up, and then the thought has passed and I've moved on, the wind dies down a little bit. Okay, got it. Especially in the fall, I found that that is a really good time for me to communicate, because I get to go out by the trees when their leaves are starting to turn colors, and the leaves, since they're more crisp, make more sound, they're louder, and to me they sound clearer, if that makes
Yeah.
any sense.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So anyway, those are my two elements that I feel most affinity for, and I'm guessing, since you asked the question, you too have an affinity for elements.
Well, it changes here and there. I guess it just changes what, because I have such a different reaction to different elements. The water is kind of a weird one because it's just water, it's kind of one where I just kind of want to listen. I've actually made wishes to the ocean before,
Ocean's good for what? For that.
oh yeah, ocean's great for it, but you're not going to get your wish instantly, that's for sure. Oceans don't work that way. It's just too big. It's the ocean, the water. I have a great respect for water. I have a great respect for all the elementals. Water's just an amazing one, though, and what each of them represents. So I wouldn't say that I have an affinity toward them, but I don't know. It's like I think when you talk to the wind, it's really candy because the wind brings you things and takes things away from you, and it's a great thing to cast out words and thoughts in because they can go for a long way, much quicker than with any other element. That's a great thing about the wind. The wind can bring you news easily. If you're just standing at it, you'll get impressions of things that are happening
Oh
around
yeah.
the country and the world and stuff.
Oh yeah. I've used the wind to purge negative emotions, negative thoughts, let them go, and yeah, I'll tell you what. I'm getting really personal here, and it feels kind of awkward, but I'll say it anyway. There have been some times where, I was actually doing some of these emotional, mental cleansings with the wind, and to be honest, there had been points where there were the wind would start blowing and I did not feel it stop blowing to take a break or anything for, you know, 10, 15 minutes while I was doing the whole cleansing. Mm-hmm. On a beach, sure, that's more acceptable. The wind has a tendency to blow and not really stop. Just like, you know, it can blow for that long and then all of a sudden, and then start again and you're constantly being hit with wind. When you're in a valley surrounded by hills and things like that and trees and all this other stuff that really good for blocking the wind, having it blow like that constantly is, at least to my understanding, kind of unusual. So I've only felt it happen like that on the beach and when I was cleansing a bunch of stuff. So when you're talking about the wind can actually take a lot of stuff from it and, you know, bring you a lot of stuff. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, but I find it interesting you mentioned about water because water is definitely one of those elements, like you were saying, that it doesn't really do anything quickly.
No, not really.
It does well, things in its own time.
It just depends. I mean, here's the interesting thing about the elementals. The elementals are so, because we're human, because we're creatures, because we're animals, because mm-hmm. we're composed of nature, we're composed of all the elements just as much as anything else. We are so interconnected with the elements, but we're just not aware of it. Now, when you're talking about a consensus reality or collective consciousness, then that's when we really see, and I'm not talking about the Falwellian Roberts and Michelle Bachmann idea of we brought earthquakes onto ourselves and hurricanes.
Man.
I'm not talking about that. That's not what I'm talking about. But I will say that an emotional intensity or emotional position in mass will affect the weather. And I say that because you remember what it's like here in the Pacific Northwest, Donald. It's just a whole different vibe of type of people, different than California. And granted, everybody has their own. But Washington is state, I have to say that to clarify for you guys out there. For anyone who's not in Washington, we have to say Washington State.
Yeah.
If you're in Washington, you say Washington. Anyway, in the Pacific Northwest here, we've had this kind of little crazy cool pocket. The rest of the country was going through these crazy heat waves and these, you know, 90s and triple digit temperatures. And meanwhile, we're just coasting along in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we're the only place in the country. We were the only state, literally, we were the only state in the country that was not suffering from heat waves.
Do you know how jealous I was?
Well, I can imagine. I can imagine. Because it was just kind of weird. And here we are going, when is it going to get summer here around here? When are we going to get summer? And everybody is just like, you know, quit your complaining.
Yeah.
Don't know how good you have it. But the interesting thing is that we would have a lot of crazy windy days around here. And it always came because people, I would just see the correlation. People would get this weird frustrated feeling. And then all of a sudden a windy day would come, a stormy kind of windy day. And then the rains would come out of nowhere. Just in, you could, if you watch closely enough, the general mood of the people around you, and watch the weather connected, you could see inherently linked.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, we're taking a little bit kind of into the element stuff like that. And I want to get back into a little bit of the magical realm stuff.
We may have to expand on that and just have a whole episode just on elementals.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's an important conversation because I do believe that a lot of these realms are tied to some of the elements. So.
Oh, yeah. And like you said at the beginning, you know, the elemental is just a subgenre of the whole topic that we're talking about.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So, have you ever fallen in love with a mermaid like Tom Hanks did in Splash?
Well, I think that there are mermaids. I think there's a mermaid realm, and I think they're one of the ones that can slip in and out of our realm. I don't know if I'd use the word easily. I just think they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I want to kind of go with I'm going to tell the story of what I think happened.
Okay.
The realm. When we were forming this consensus reality, when we were coming into human perception, I think what happened is that our human just consciousness in human form. I want to deliberately use that statement.
Okay.
Consciousness in human form was playing around on its way to human form. Evolution, just like we talked about in the nonlinear creation, I don't think it's a straight line where, you know, Homo Australopithecus, blah, 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 blah. I think there's some merit there. I'm not going to throw that out at all. But at the same time, I do believe that there are non-linear paths of evolution where we were playing with our consciousness. And in doing so, we were experimenting with paths we could take. Do we want to take more of an, you know, equine path? Do we want to take more of an amphibian path? Do we want to take more of an avian path? And so then you get these things like sphinxes and the rocks, and then you get the things like the mermaids and the centaurs, where consensus reality was still loose and didn't really have any boundaries. And if you ask how far back in the past was that, it's not a fair question, because it was before time got really cemented in concrete. I think when time began, as we know it, is when we said, all right, we're going all the way in with the consensus reality in human form, consciousness in human form. So that's where I think we get all the tendrils and tethers of these other realms. And I think that's when humans coexisted with these creatures in other realms, and we could talk to them as easily as we can see birds, crows flying around outside. And I think that broke off when we said, all right, we're committed to the human path here. And the other realms were like, all right, you made the call. You're on your own. You know, we can't play there. And we're like, yeah, but this is what we've chosen.
Yeah, that reminds me of a children's movie that came out, I think, in the late 70s, early 80s. And I think it was based on a book. And it was called Flight of Dragons. And it was one of my favorite childhood movies that I saw. And there, what you were just talking about was brought up in this book, where, you know, the magical and non-magical worlds don't really mesh very well, kind of like oil and water. Mm-hmm. Those that are part of the scientific world, which we'd consider our, as you said, consensus reality, as it is now, it's very difficult to see and peer into the magical world, the magical reality, as it were. That's one of the things I loved about this whole story. It also is based around dragons and wizards and, you know, for a kid.
What's it called?
Flight of Dragons.
Okay.
I just found that whole thing really interesting, where it's just like, and I think I remember being young and being like, I want to be able to see the magical realm. And that may have been one of those moments where it's just like, yeah, I want to see the magical realm. And then there was whole, the never-ending story, which is just like, worlds exist in your dreams. Like, I like that too. And then, you know, you kind of look back and it's just like, it's kind of like your people that hear that, those messages and hear the call, like, you know, Hollywood kind of puts out a lot of movies for a reason, to be like, if you want to go a little bit, just a little bit back to the conspiracy thing, where, you know, there is a greater good that, you know, can teach you messages through media such as movies and TV and stuff, that, or it opens you up to that idea much more than we've been in the past, because it's a lot easier to, I guess, believe in mythical creatures and you know, have people that have magical powers and all these things. If you see movie after movie, year after year of your life, you kind of become desensitized to the supernaturalness of it, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it does. You mean when it is segregated?
Yeah, because
by the fiction and by the Hollywood.
Yeah, because I mean, you're going to hate me for this, but how do you feel about zombies?
Actually, you know, I have to say, somebody posted on Facebook the only time I said, okay, I dig the zombies for this. Somebody posted on Facebook some actual, real wedding picture, engagement pictures that a couple had done. They were great. You know, they were dressed, and he was dressed in a, you know, an Oxford shirt and some khakis, and she's dressed in a nice summer dress, and they're sitting out in a meadow, and they're, you know, holding each other, and, you know, nice, what do you call them, engagement poses. And then as they're doing this, you could see in the very background a zombie headed their way. And at first you're looking at this like, oh, another set of engagement pictures. How cute. How sweet. Yawn. And then you see the zombie in the background. It gets closer, and then it shows the two of them fighting this zombie and, you know, taking it down. It's awesome. It was awesome. And I'm like, all right, zombie, you get a pass on this one.
Exactly. Now, if you had never heard of zombies before, if it wasn't so widespread and people so knowledgeable about zombies and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden, the first zombie whatever comes out, you know, it might be pretty scary. Kind of like going back to the whole idea of Orson Welles and War of the Worlds, the radio broadcast where people thought, oh my goodness, we actually are being invaded. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, you know, it's been so many years, we hear about aliens coming down like, oh yeah, there's YouTube videos all over the place that are like, oh yeah, there's a UFO here and there's a UFO here, and it's like, wow, that's kind of freaky. You know, we really aren't alone in the universe, or someone has a really good video project going on. That's what I'm talking about. Being desensitized makes you less afraid of whatever you're being desensitized to, such as zombies. I mean, I know that talking with you, a lot of times you're just like, zombies, okay, whatever. Come on, people, let's use a little bit more creativity. I know the human race has it in them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's also vampires. Like, oh, vampires, okay, well, if I got my garlic and my steak, then you know, I'm good. And of course, now they have Twilight vampires.
Depends on what... not the Twilight.
That vampires. You don't even need a steak in your heart, you know?
Well, you know, there's it's interesting how many different vampire mythology has come up. Because you had the Anne Rice vampires, and mm-hmm. you've got the Charlaine Harris vampires, and then you have the Stephanie... What is her last name?
Meyer or something?
Stephanie
like
Meyer vampires, the sparkly rave vampires. I'm a vampire. Look at my face. you know, see these, and I don't know. It's like, it's interesting to see kind of where this came from, and the vampire mythology. I think that the undead does kind of have a realm, but I think their realm is a little. It's not quite the same idea of the fantasy creatures like the dragons and the sprites and nymphs and mermaids and those such things. I think there's different categories. You've got those, mm-hmm. the mermaids and such. You have those, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have the undead, the dark, and they are in a completely different realm. I don't think those realms cross at all. The vampire realm is almost kind of a bleed or an echo or a resonance of our own dark psyches, of our own shadow selves.
So we can't have like zombie fairies or anything like that? No. Tinkerbell would take on a whole new look.
No. Those realms don't cross. I just don't think so. But I think there's the shadow realms, I just don't think we separate from ourselves as easily as we do the fairy realms. There are some schools of thought that some people have fairy blood in them, and I don't know. Mm. I'm not sure about that. But then there's also another realm, which is the, you know, I've seen it. I've got pictures of it realm, which would be the Bigfoots and the Yetis the...
Loch Ness Monster.
The Loch Ness Monster, yeah. What do you think of that?
Oh, I'm sure they exist.
Are you?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. Because...
Why?
Because for me, I think whatever these creatures are able to do, they're very seclusive, and they know that they are just going to pull back and pull back until there's nothing left, until all the land is developed. And, I mean, from the Northwest, there are people that go hiking and get lost easily. Mm-hmm. And die, you know, out, and they're like, we're going out for a day hike in, you know, the Appalachian Forest or Appalachian National Park or whatever, or, you know, some of the other places. And then it's like, okay, here, if we don't hear from you by this time, this is when we're going to start worrying. And every so often you'll hear a news report where, oh yeah, the body of a hiker from last July was found in so and so and such. And to me, if we can lose a human being that, you know, has some idea of direction and can actually see the sun occasionally and be like, okay, you know, let's we have everyone has a basic knowledge of how to get out of a forest, and if you're in a place that, whether it's the geography or the feng shui or whatever, can get you twisted and turned around where you die, then I'm sure, to me, it's very easy for creatures that are more in tune with how that energy works and how that geography works to stay fairly hidden for a very long time, if not forever. Well, I'm not going to say forever. Avoid detection from a majority of from humans for a very, 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 very long time.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree with that. I do. The times that I'm really awake to it is, like you said, the Pacific Northwest here, there's so much wooded area. Not that there isn't in other parts of the country, but I've heard West Coast transplants that live in the East Coast say that they feel a lot more removed from nature. Even though there's plenty of nature out there, there's just such a thick amount of trees and water and all this other stuff here in the Pacific Northwest. When you're flying over the Olympics, mm-hmm. the Olympic National Forest, or over the mountains, you're just like, oh my goodness, there are so many trees out there. There are so much woods out there. How could you not hide if you knew your way around better than a park ranger, for goodness sake?
Yeah, and having, you know, spent 11 years living in the Northwest, in Washington State, also spending time in the Wasatch Valley in Salt Lake City area, and then North Alabama area, and now on the East Coast in the Virginia area, and then there was that year in Pennsylvania, but, you know, I'm not going to consider that because still East Coast. I've had a good sampling, if you were, of the different types of natural environments of majority of the United States of America. And I find it really interesting, just like what you were saying, how much of a contrast there is. I'll tell you what, David, when I moved to the Northwest, to Washington State, I loved hiking. I loved hiking because, I mean, I remember the first time I went hiking there, I'm like, oh my goodness, these are trees that are just here, like you see in almost every sci-fi movie, because they actually film a lot of those in the Northwest. It's just like, yeah. I've never really walked through a forest that looked like it was on a movie set.
Yeah.
And there is a definite, let me see how to phrase it. There is a more intense type of energy that is, well, I think you used the word thicker type of energy.
Mm-hmm.
There is definitely a much more thicker type of energy to the environment there. And the trees are definitely, I think, the main reason for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the trees, it's funny you're talking about talking to the wind, because there's a lot of people who talk to trees and understand trees. And I get glimpses from them every now and then, I don't feel like I can communicate with them thoroughly, but I have a great respect for them because their consciousness is just something we can't even perceive. Their consciousness lives in has a perception of time that we just don't even, that we wouldn't even come close to understanding. They're so majestic and grand, and they've lived so long, and you know, it's so funny, we pull a tree out of the earth and you think, well, you know, it's obvious where its roots end. No, it's not. The tree becomes the earth so integrally in a way that you watch it, it goes into the earth and becomes the earth. I don't care where you say the root capillaries of the roots end. No, they're so intertwined, one becomes the other. They're majestic, they're amazing, and there's such vibrance and energy in that. And a creature like a Sasquatch can, like you were saying, can take its vibration and blend so well and be able to hide in there. I don't know what that one was thinking that was kind of walking out in the open there. The guy got on the Saputer film style of Sasquatch thing, you know? He turns and looks, and I don't know why he didn't flip off the camera at that moment. That's what's kind of a mystery to me. But it's interesting. I think that when that happened, it's like, you know what? Let's get him talking. It wouldn't have been seen if it didn't want to be seen.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with a little bit of conspiracy stuff here, because I don't, for me personally, I don't know if that actual footage is of actual Sasquatch or if it is a guy in a costume. So, and I, this is one of those dichotomies that I have, where it's just like, yes, I believe Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti exist. I believe that they physically are out in the world. And then I see film and I'm just like, you know, it could be, it could not be. I'm going to have to be very skeptical here, because I watched Jurassic Park like 15, 16 years ago, early 90s, maybe longer than that. And those dinosaurs looked really good on the screen to me, too. And they looked pretty real. If they can do that with computer graphics and stuff, it wouldn't be hard to make a life-size looking Sasquatch. Oh, they're what they did that already. Harry and the Hendersons. I forgot about that.
Oh, right, right.
John Lithgow. It's one of those where it goes back to, well, when I see it, I believe it. Well, here you see it, and like, well, I still believe it.
I want to make a little sidebar comment on that. Someone said to me that I thought was just amazing. Seeing is believing, right?
Okay.
Don't you love that quote where, you know, I have to see it to believe it?
Yeah.
Well, someone said to me, you know, it's funny that people are so dependent on seeing something to believe it, because our sight, our vision is the easiest sense to fool.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you want to see something for it to be proof, it's interesting that it's actually less proof than anything else. How it's not easy to fool your ears. It's not easy to fool your sense of smell. You can't. You smell it or you don't. Your taste will forget about it. And touching something, oh, yeah, there's – how are you going to fool yourself when you're touching something? But your sight?
It is possible, though.
Well, it's possible, but it's a lot more difficult to fool yourself by sense of touch than it is to fool yourself by sense of vision. I mean, look at illusionists. They base their whole career on fooling things with your eyes. So that's what Randy's talking about. And I'm like, well, Randy, try to fool things with your ears and all that other stuff. Then then let's see. So I just found it interesting that you said seeing is believing, because, yeah, well, you're a sucker then, in a way.
And if you take – and to me, for many, many years, I'm like, oh, that phrase doesn't really hold any water anymore, because if seeing is believing and you have gone to a movie in the past, I don't know, since movies began,
then you believe everything.
then you have to say, you have to concede that you believe what you've seen.
Right.
Because seeing is believing. Like Freddy Krueger. Oh man, really? That's one I don't know if we had thought about talking about. Succubus and Succubi.
Oh yeah, Succubus, Succubi. Yeah,
those are really interesting. And
aren't those kind of a darker thing?
Yeah, I guess they would. But I don't know. I don't think they're in the same arena as like vampires and the undead or zombies or anything like that.
What about demons?
Oh yeah, I would put them.
What's your thoughts on demons? Do you believe? I mean, there are, you can divide a room on how many people believe in them and don't believe in them, or whether or not they do, I should say.
See, this is where my healer stuff comes in, and it's just like, okay, yes, demons exist. They're not as dangerous as people make them out to be, or the media makes them out to be. In my opinion, the whole poltergeist thing. If that is actually possible, and I leave that open as, you know, a possibility, then it is extremely rare. I mean, extremely, like maybe once every 3 centuries in one part of the world, maybe.
You know, you say what a lot of people say. A lot of the, at least the things I expose myself to say that demons are pretty rare, and I would agree with that.
Yeah. Now, you know, I also believe that there are ethereal bugs. there's like entities that are more like insects than actually having a real consciousness. And if anyone has ever been in a room or a house or wherever where there's been a fly just buzzing around and how annoying it is, then if one of these, ethereal bugs, ethereal flies, as it were, because that's the best analogy I can use, decides that, oh, your house is nice or whatever, or that gets trapped and whatever, then yeah, you know, it can be quite annoying. And if you're not familiar with it or whatever, then it can become very scary, you know. And pets love that because, you know, if I mean, if you have a cat and you've ever seen a cat chase any bug, you know, cats normally can see a little bit better into the ethereal realm than we can. And sometimes people look at their cats and it looks like their cats are following something and they're just not, and like, who knows, you know? So,
well, those also could be orbs. That also could be energy from people who haven't crossed over, spirits.
Well, yeah. What I'm saying is it could be anything. It could be any number of those things. But I'm saying if it is one of these negative, if it's one of these ethereal insects, as I call them, then, you know, it could affect animals that way too. So yeah, I believe in demons. I believe that they're real. I think the occurrences of them causing anything, any major harm to any human that doesn't really want it to begin with is extremely rare to almost non-existent. But I also see that there's like ethereal bugs that are like insects where they don't really have a lot of they don't think much, they just go on instinct. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when where a lot of the stories of demons comes from, is it's just these psychic bugs going on instinct, and it's just like, ah!
Interesting. Yeah, interesting. So, I haven't heard that idea before, but I find it very interesting.
I know. You know, I don't... I've not heard other people talk about it. I've always considered it one of my things because, like I said, I've never actually heard anyone other talk about it. So, but anyway.
So you do believe that there are the Sasquatch that exist.
Yes.
And you believe that they're just very adapt at hiding.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think there are a lot of creatures that are out there like that. I think there are creatures that, again, I always say about the Sasquatch, if you haven't seen it before, it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. I don't know where we get that idea, but we seem to kind of, in our science-minded way, we seem to kind of have that idea that, well, no one's ever seen one, so it doesn't exist. Well, does a tree, if a tree falls in the forest kind of idea, does it make a sound? I mean, arrogant humans say, no, I didn't hear it. Well, you know, that's yeah, but there's definitely an effect. If it fell in the forest, maybe it made a sound, maybe it didn't. You know, maybe sound's just relevant to humans, but it had an effect if it fell. So it crushed something.
I look at it, I got tired of the whole tree thing. It's like, if a volcano erupts in the South Pacific and no one's around to see it, does it really erupt?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, it still affects the water and the wildlife and everything around there. Right. So, do you believe? I'm going to ask you the same question. How do you feel about demons and Sasquatch, and what do you feel about them?
Oh, I think Sasquatch are real. I think so. I think they're very adept at hiding. You know, there's a lot of things that people say. Well, it could be imagination. Well, it could be made up. It could be a story. Blah blah. Number one. The Native Americans have talked about Sasquatch. It's a Native American word, for goodness sakes.
Yeah,
and they weren't ones to say, let's just make stuff up. And they're like, well, you have the spirit totems. I'm like, well, they're not making those up either. So, you know, they know how to survive off the land a lot better than we do. You know, you put us out in the middle of nowhere and see how well we do without any training. But yet they just knew. They knew what a winter was going to be like coming up and all that other stuff. So, but I think that those elements, yeah, I do believe that the Sasquatch are very tangible in our consensus reality, but I think it's hard for us to see because we don't believe in them, so that makes it hard for us to see. It's almost like, I was talking about this at the group I was with. We were talking about how sometimes you lose your keys, and you looked everywhere for them, but yet you, when you find them, they were exactly where you left them, but you swear you looked there a number of times. Mm-hmm. And there's the idea of the key gnomes or whatever, but there's also an idea that you just happen to have a visual screen over it, whether it's your psychological screen or whether it's just something kind of tweaked in consensus reality. I don't know what it is.
Doctor Who calls that a perceptive filter.
Oh, okay. I like that. I'll go with a perceptive filter. So it's like we have a perceptive filter. It's like the whole, I don't know how many times in this podcast we're going to talk about the tall ships, but we love talking about the tall ships. I'm just going to say in the show notes, I'm going to say tall ships. See every other time I talked about tall ships. The whole tall ships with the Native Americans, and, you know, what the bleep.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's the same idea. It's like if you see a Sasquatch and you turn your head, you're going to be like, oh, that was just the wind playing with it. So you're going to dismiss it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's kind of the things that happens. The demons, well, God, you could divide a room on this whole thing with demons.
Oh, I know.
People will swear up and down that there are demons.
Mm-hmm.
I think when there is enough of an absence of light, when there's enough of an absence of positively creative force, it starts to create this dark well, this well where light kind of avoids it. You know what I mean? Darkness can't absorb light. You know, it just can't. It can't. So what happens is light just avoids it. And I think that eventually that energy collects. And when you have enough intelligent energy that works from this really, you know, negative, and I'm using negative in a very archetypal way, not necessarily in a good, bad, evil, good thing way. But I think that that's what happens is you get these forces that have a lot of negative, so they attract negativity, but they also repel things that are based on light. And I think eventually they can kind of create, they can take on a life of their own. It's very hard for them to get around. It's very hard because there's so much light everywhere. It's very, very difficult for this to reside in a place of light. So it has to find places. And there are realms. There are realms where light just does not reach. And
oh, yeah.
I think they reside in those realms. And you almost have to invite them and create openings. And there has to be strong enough portals, wide enough for them to come through into this realm. There's no bleed through like this, like the Fae and the Fairy realm, those and ghosts and all those other stuff. They coexist with us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like when we talked about the Schumann resonance idea.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of, I think, a cousin to that, where if you just kind of shifted a little bit of your focus or vibration, you'd be able to see into that realm because it's coexisting here. But I think that the demon realm is different. I think you have to really kind of take a demonic bus or something here. I don't know.
Yeah, you were talking about that in the movie Constantine with...
Constantine.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm asking. I don't know that movie.
It's the movie Constantine, based on graphic novels, a.k.a. comic books, came out a few years ago. And, yeah, Keanu Reeves plays the main character in there. He actually travels over to hell. For what he has to go through to travel over there and how he comes back, yeah, like you're saying, it's not something you just slip into, like, oh, like you stub your toe, and like, oh, like stub, I fell, you know, I sneezed and all of a sudden I'm in hell, you know, or I'm in the demon realm. No, you actually have to really, really know what you're doing and really, really work to get there.
But I don't think there's such a place as hell, so...
Oh, yeah, well, me neither, but...
But I understand what you're saying, yeah. You use it as an illustration as to...
It's easier to say hell than, say, like, another realm on a different plane of existence
right. Yeah.
Parallel to ours, and, like, hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because most people are most people get the idea of that term.
Here's my this just came to me. I don't know. This just popped into my head. You ready?
Sure, go.
Like I said, I don't think a demon could come into this realm very easily, in my opinion. I think they're very rare. And I think the reason they're very rare is because this is not a good place for them to be. There's too much light. And I think when a demon comes into this realm, a lot of times it's either been called or it's been accidentally. And I think all the chaos that they cause is just because they're just trying to hide again. They're trying to get back to this super dark realm. Because the super dark realm, there's just nothing there.
Mm.
It's just it's a realm of nothing. Nothing. It's a realm of something so dark that you can't go there because there's no there to go. You know what I mean? So they're just trying to get back to that nothingness. That the somethingness is just too disconcerting. That I don't know. I like that. I just
kind of like when you capture a wild animal and you put it in a small cage and it will try to break out of that cage in every way it can until it tires. And
exactly, you know, yeah.
And that's kind of like the demons over here are kind of like this is their cage. Like, they're trying to get out, and as they're trying to get out, they're bumping into walls and freaking people out. And
well, yeah, or they're trying to destroy whatever's around them to create enough darkness to make themselves comfortable again.
Oh, yeah, kind of like...
Kind of entropy coming to life in a way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Oh, I found the source of light. It's a light bulb. Knock the light bulb out. Okay. Oh, there's a human being that is full of light. Knock them out. Like, make it all go away.
Yeah, exactly. It's just drawing itself as far away from light as they can. So you distinguish light.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Oh, jeez.
Ruby red slippers. Toto! Toto!
That's a whole other thing, too. That's an interesting kind of... And, you know, a lot of these... I'm glad you said The Wizard of Oz, because I think a lot of these things, like the Harry Potters and The Wizard of Oz's and all those things, there is kind of a... They exist out there in kind of a nether realm where they're just kind of in bits and pieces. That same realm that we were involved with before consensus reality drove us into our own kind of isolated time chain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those stories are in existence out in that realm, and we kind of reach over and kind of take a peek in them. And I think through our own human creativity, we actually kind of assemble them into complete worlds and give them tangibility and actually make those worlds a little bit more real. So when you said seeing is believing, in a way it is. Mm. In a way, you do give it a reality. Granted, you've sequestered that reality to fiction or to make-believe or to Hollywood. But yet it is its own reality. It is its own created realm. The fiction realm is its own realm with kind of different cities, which would be different fictional stories.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I concede wholeheartedly because we are in total agreement with that because, like I said, one of my favorite movies growing up was A Neverending Story because the concept of, thoughts become things. Thoughts, dreams. Dreams are sort of thoughts. Dreams need a place to be. Ah, Fantasia. Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, I think that will do it for this episode. We'd like to thank all of our listeners for taking the time to hear David's My Project. We've been doing this for, a year and a half now?
Close to that, yeah.
And we actually are still enjoying this. So.
Oh, absolutely.
We have more. We're going to keep recording episodes. So for TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com, this is Donald Dalton wishing you an open perceptive filter.
And I'm David Deere. Believe.